The career long in college for Elliott, 56. This to win it and become an instant hero in Philadelphia, Jake Elliott.
This is the worst.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, episode 38. Ethan Weiss here with you once again to review the New York Giants dumpster fire. But before we get into everything that was bad about last Sunday, we got to take care of the housekeeping. So first things first, go follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at EthanGSN. You can follow Weiss at NYG Daily. You can go follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe, subscribe, subscribe. We are on Audioboom. We are on iTunes. We are on Google Play. We are on Stitcher Radio. So if you're not following us on one of those, do it. Please, helps the show grow, and we appreciate every single listen that we get. All right, Weiss. Giants are 0-3. Neither of us expected to be in this situation come between week 3 and 4. Things are looking gloomy. I have absolutely zero hope. I assume that you, being the naturally more positive individual of the two of us, is probably a bit more positive.
Yeah, I am. Okay. I'm not like we're fine. I'm just more of so I take the positives away from Sunday and I say let's build on it. But we can discuss that.
Okay.
As we go into the show.
We will do all of that. Yes. But first,
there's something you want to talk about.
There's something that I want to talk about.
I'll let you have the floor.
And
I'll just sit in behind you and sip my tea.
Okay.
All right.
There is something that I want to talk about, and it is the Odell Beckham Jr. hate. The crotchety old talk radio hosts, looking at you, Mike Francesa. The Steve Politis of the world, who, after a 79-yard, two-touchdown game that single-handedly kept the New York Giants in it against the Philadelphia Eagles, want to focus on a slightly over-the-top celebration that got the New York Giants penalized. Now, Weiss, let me ask you something. Did that penalty result in anything negative for the Giants?
Nope.
Has anything Odell Beckham been flagged for in terms of celebrations resulted in anything negative last year or this year for the New York Giants?
In terms of celebration, probably not.
The answer is no. You can point to the Josh Norman incident, which got him suspended for a game. I'm talking specifically end zone celebrations, of which Antonio Brown, I might add, had 3 personal fouls called against him last year for end zone celebrations. Not a peep out of anyone. These people who think that this team is better off trading Odell Beckham Jr., who think he's a distraction, who hate his antics, are the biggest idiots in the New York Giant fan base. LT ran around high as a kite for a decade, and you're upset that Odell Beckham is celebrating a touchdown? The Giants went 11-5 last year, and this guy was the only thing that was powering this putrid offense, and it's still putrid. We're going to get into it. They put up 24 points. They're still terrible. We're talking about either not re-signing or trading away a top 3 wide receiver in the NFL. The best player on the New York Giants. We're talking about the fastest player to reach 250 career receptions. The fastest player to reach 4,000 career receiving yards. The most games with 125 plus receiving yards in the first 3 seasons. Most receiving yards in his first 2 seasons. A 3-time Pro Bowler. That's who we're talking about. Odell Beckham Jr. The gasoline that makes this Giants offense run. Who single-handedly won them 3 games on game-winning touchdowns last year, and that's not including the other games in which he had contributions, which they might have lost had he not been playing. This needs to stop. This nonsense about complaining about his celebrations and getting flagged and his antics, none of his on-field issues have harmed the team. You know what happened after he got flagged for peeing like a dog? The Eagles returned it at the 28-yard line, 3 more than if it would have been a touchback. And then immediately turn the ball over for, guess what? Another Odell Beckham touchdown. The hate needs to stop. We addressed this at the end of last year. Can Odell Beckham Jr. act more mature? Absolutely. Is it harming this team? No. He is loved in the locker room. He is loved by a good amount of this fan base. And the fan part of the fan base that doesn't like him, shame on you, because you're watching the greatest talent since LT. It needs to stop. He is the future, and he is the present. So if you don't like him, you better get used to him, because John Mara is about to open up the pocketbook for this guy. He's about to back up the Brinks truck to this guy's house and make him a Giant long term. So you better get used to it. That's the end of my rant.
And the people saying, you know, you talked about records, and I'm not gonna talk about this. I'm done discussing this with people. But I will say one thing, and it's funny because I hear a lot of people say, "Well, they're not winning. He's breaking all these records. They're not winning." Well, if you got a guy who's given you what Odell has given you, and you're still not winning games, I'm sorry, that's an indictment on the rest of the roster, yes, not on Odell Beckham.
That is quite possibly the dumbest argument, that they haven't won a playoff game, that their records have been terrible. This team would not win 5 games last year if he is not on the roster. And that is a fact.
I mean, you saw Dallas week 1, right?
And then you saw the week after where he was playing not at 100%. And then you see week 3 where he is on the roster, on the field at 100% and puts up 79 yards, 2 touchdowns, and is the only reason that the New York Giants are in the game. And the media want to tear him down.
And by Odell standards, 7 for 79 yards and
is 2 touchdowns. Is a bad game.
Is a pedestrian game, yes. The only reason I won't say bad is because he had 2 touchdowns.
Fair enough. Yardage-wise, we've come to expect even more.
Yep.
So that's it. I'm sick and tired of it.
So now can we talk about why the Giants lost?
Yes. Let's get into Giants Philadelphia. You take it away, because I am out of breath from that rant.
Well, right off the bat, I mean, the Giants came out, and lo and behold, we saw no changes. We saw the same offensive line formation, and it probably would have been, you know, Justin Pugh at left guard and Bobby Hart at right tackle. Bobby Hart could have played, but obviously he was out, so there was that little wrinkle there, but that was by force. We saw the pace picked up by the Giants. They were getting the ball out quickly, moving the ball. But again, you know, it was turnovers. It was the inability to run the football. And it was the same plays run over and over and over again. And it wasn't until the fourth quarter when, you know, Odell Beckham lit a spark under this team and they were able to get 7 points. And then get the football back after the defense forces a turnover, and they're able to, you know, score another one, which is a remarkable catch that he made, that Odell made in the end zone. And then Sterling Shepard, who went 77 yards for the touchdown. But, you know, it just seems like when you get something going, you know, it's the other side of the football that sort of gives something up, and it was all day. It's been all season. You know, where has the Giants' run defense been? They were gassed by the Eagles, specifically LeGarrette Blount in the first
half.
Ran
through him.
And then Wendell Smallwood in the second half. And then obviously that final possession, it's the epitome of what's held this Giant team back. 59 or 53 seconds. I think they had 3 timeouts. All you need is 3 points to win the game. And, you know, you get, I think, a 7-yard play to Evan Engram, and bad clock management by the head coach. You hurry up to the line. I think you got a legal formation.
Yep.
Back you up 5 yards. Yes. And then you're left, you know, in no man's land. You've already wasted so much time. And then Shane Vereen catches a pass out of the backfield and runs out of bounds, gives the Eagles a free timeout. You end up punting the football back to Philadelphia, and, you know,
28-yard shank by Brad Wing.
Yeah, you get a bad punt by the punter who's we thought was one of the best, you know, that we have in the league. But he shanks a punt. You know, Carson Wentz hits Alshon Jeffrey for a play that I'm still trying to figure out how that clock didn't run out. But then 61 yards, and the Giants are 0-3. So, you know, here they are. They're 0-3. We can sit here and talk about how they were able to score 24 points, but at the end of the day, there's no moral victories in this. As the great Bill Parcells said, you are what your record says you are, and the Giants are an 0-3 team looking at a tough stretch of games coming up.
It's not even – there are no moral victories in my eyes. You can't even spin this properly. Not only are the Giants losing, they're losing in the stereotypical ways we've seen the last 3 and 4 years. Mm-hmm. Terrible run defense. Fluke special teams plays on both sides of the football. It's truly mind-boggling. Bad time management. The offense had scored 13 total points through 11 quarters. And then, Weiss, I'm sure you recognize this. The way that they scored these points, it was the identical offense to last year. They ran 11 personnel, I believe 89% of the time. Mm-hmm. They were running these quick slants to their wide receivers, and thankfully the Eagles secondary is terrible enough that they could get away with it. The touchdown to Eli Manning threw to Sterling Shepard, don't get me wrong, that's a dime, but that was thrown through three cornerbacks who just weren't ready for it.
That was a great throw.
Great throw.
Yeah. And great run after catch by Sterling Shepard.
Didn't know he had the burners.
Yeah.
The Eagles secondary is bad. We spoke about this last week. Mm-hmm. Giants putting up 24, notably in the fourth quarter. It shouldn't be an accomplishment, because there are some fans out there who see the Giants put up 24 and they lost on a fluke special teams play, and they get hope. And they say, oh, well, you know what? The Giants offense is finally starting to click. Next week, maybe they can, you know, really bust out. No, this is the same exact offense that we saw last year. It is not good, and no one should start believing it's good until they can consistently do this against decent secondaries.
There is one part of the game that we sort of missed out, and I think that's what really cost this team, and that was at the end of the half. You have first and goal inside the 5.
Kick the field goal.
We could talk about that, but let's just go through the sequence here. And this is one of the main reasons why. Before last year, if you remember me, I said, I don't think it's the play calling. I think it's the execution. But now I'm starting to realize that play calling is just, it's awful. First and goal from the 5 or from the 3, wherever the hell they were. I don't know where they were, but they were inside. They were in the red zone.
Yeah.
They got Shepard. Look, he didn't get in. He got in. I don't know what it was. Fine. The next play, you run another play for Sterling Shepard. And then it comes to fourth and goal. And what do? You run Orleans Darkwa. You don't use the fullback. That's one.
And by the way, I need to interrupt you. When I gifted that, people were saying, oh, what would the fullback have done? The guy busted right through the middle. It doesn't matter. It's the principle. You have Shane on the roster for a reason. You use him.
Yes. And look, I'm not taking anything away from Sterling Shepard, but in that situation, I mean, can we run a play for Odell? Can we run a play for Brandon Marshall?
Can we throw a fade? He hasn't been the first look in the red zone through 3 games.
Not that
the Giants have been in the red zone too often. He's got to be the first look.
And listen, Brandon Marshall hasn't played well. I'm not going to sit here and make an excuse for him. But they're not playing to his strengths.
What is he here for? He's here for jump balls. He's here for the red zone. Give him opportunities.
And they have him running these little cute routes that they have Odell and Sterling Shepard run, and that's not his game. He's a guy who you throw that back shoulder fade to. He's that guy you throw a jump ball to kind of get him going. And there was that one play where Eli was picked. It was a bad pass. Should Brandon Marshall have, you know, used some effort? Of course.
Bad pass, worst play on the ball.
But that doesn't mean that you stop trying to get him the ball. I just think that the Giants don't know how to use Brandon Marshall. I just don't think that they know how to use him. And I think that his spot now, I know he had 6 catches for 88 yards and he got going in that fourth quarter. But I mean, listen, when you're down there, you're in the red zone, you got to get the ball to the reason why to Brandon Marshall. That's the reason why he's here, to help out in the red zone. And when you can't run the football, It makes you one dimensional, and you know it's tougher to get in the end zone. But you know, listen, running two plays with Sterling Shepard, I didn't make sense to me. And then that fourth down play, I mean, it was just I'm still scratching my head at it. You don't even go jumbo, bring in DJ Fluker, add a fullback, add your tight ends if you're going to run it, but you didn't do that at all, and it was doomed from the start. And listen, man, it's
the play calling is horrendous. It's
very bad.
Listen, I mean, I know you like to take the positives. I have no idea how anyone can be optimistic about this team, not even like making a run to the playoffs, making a run to be average at season's end. I know that they're supposed to be this talented roster, and I saw what they did last year, but last year was on the back of their defense, and their defense is run defense, not great. Eli Apple getting taken advantage of. Darian Thompson, underwhelming so far. So, and this is one of the fears that I expressed to you in one of our preseason podcasts was, listen, the offense we all thought was going to be better, but we should expect some sort of regression from the defense because last year was just absurd, but I don't think we expected this.
No, I think they're getting gas. Excuse me, they're getting gas.
Yes,
they are. They're not able to get off the field on third downs. And listen, they forced only two turnovers in three games, and that's not. You know, they're going to need more from their defense going forward if they're going to turn this around. But you know, it's tough to sort of, you know, go after the defense because the offense is just so abysmal. I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's
there. And with no running game, you're not going to have any time of possession.
Yeah, I mean, listen, you get the ball, the defense makes a big stop on third down, they get you the ball back, and you get a quick three and out. You turn the ball right over. I mean, the NFL is all about momentum. It's all about, you know, getting in rhythm, and when you're able to get momentum, you can do a lot of things with it. But it just seems like every time the Giants got momentum. That game, Philly went down the field, scored a touchdown, or the Giants then just turned it back over and went as a three and out. So Philly made I said last week, I don't think Philadelphia is a good team. I still don't. But they did everything in their power to gift wrap the game to the Giants, and the Giants just didn't want it.
Doug Peterson did not want it. Dared McAdoo to outcoach him, and McAdoo literally couldn't. Doug Peterson made... I would say calling some of his decisions head scratching would be a compliment.
I still don't understand why he went for it on that fourth down.
Me neither. Unbelievable. Anything else you want to touch on? I know you had special teams on the list. I mean, really not much more to say other than the fact that you're playing the Eagles. These fluky special teams plays are going to happen. I mean,
well, I think Dwayne Harris as the punt returner is they need a spark on special teams.
Yeah, well, you know what? They're too stubborn to use Odell, like I've been begging for. So that spark's not going to come from anyone else.
I mean, I think you could put Sterling Shepard back there. He's been working on special teams during the summer. Why not try him? I just think that this team is just, like you said, there's so much stubbornness where it's like...
Let me ask you a question. When was the last time the Giants were returning a kicker at punt and you legitimately thought, before the person had the ball in their hands, I'm like genuinely excited to see if that person can take it to the house? It's been years.
Yeah. I mean, in 2015, Dwayne Harris had a couple good games and I was like, okay, you know, maybe, you know, he can... turn something, but overall there hasn't been nobody has really been scared of the Giants punt returners or kick returners.
No one. They don't have any reason to be. All right. Are they done? I know your answer.
You know, this is an interesting question. Are they done? I'm going to say no. And here's why. There's no moral victories in football. There's no, you know, well, we did some good things. But listen, I don't think the NFC East is a good division. I know the Giants are 0-3 and everyone else is 2-1. But I look at this team and the thing that I sort of take away from it is that they're not able to put a 60-minute game together where collectively it's offense and defense that are, you know, playing well. And listen, you can't take away scoring 24 points in the fourth quarter. I know Philadelphia's game plan was just abysmal. But what the Giants have to do is they have to take a step back, and I'm not going to sit here and sound cliche and look in the mirror or player only meeting, but they have to sit down, they have to watch this tape, and as a team they have to say, okay, what did we do well? Well, we did a good job getting the ball to Odell. We did a good job putting Sterling Shepard in position to make some plays. We got Brandon Marshall going. Orleans Darkwa had some couple of runs late in that fourth quarter. You know, we were able to force a turnover late in the game. Some of these things that they did positive, they need to take that from it. And the negatives, you have to learn from it. Okay, what did we do wrong? You know, well, maybe we should, you know, helped on this player. Maybe we should get more help for Ereck Flowers on this drive or something like that. And I think that you need to not grow from it, but learn from it in advance. They still have 13 games left. I don't think that this team is like the 2013 team. I do think this team has talent. I don't think that's something that it's a stretch by any imagination. But they just have to figure out how to win one game. Let's win one, and then we'll worry about the next one. And, you know, are they done? Probably. But I'm not going to sit here and definitively say that this team is done and they have no chance of making the playoffs. But listen, I think we call Detroit a must-win. Obviously, we call Philly a must-win, but they are done if they lose to Tampa Bay on Sunday. So, I have one foot out the door. I'm not ready to put the second foot out just yet.
I mean, listen, I've got my feet out the door. I got my suitcase packed up. Teams who start 0-3, the percentage that they make the playoffs is over time is like 3%, and that doesn't include the fact that the Giants have lost 3 in the conference and 2 in the division.
Mm-hmm.
Teams that start 0-3 historically have a very low chance of making the playoffs because those teams are not good teams. The problem, in my opinion, with now I agree to look at the positives. My problem with learning from the negatives is that we've seen the negatives for almost 20 games. We've seen putrid offensive line play. We've seen no running game. We've seen the same offensive game plan, and the only way to succeed are the quick passes. Eli Manning's getting the ball out of his hands 0.4 seconds faster than any other quarterback in the NFL on these quick slants to the receivers and relying on these receivers to win them the game. This game plan doesn't work. And Ben McAdoo either hasn't realized that or legitimately doesn't have the personnel to change it up. Now, we both spoke about it, both in the offseason, after week one, after week two, and we're going to speak about it now. We think that he has the personnel to get it done and that he's just being a stubborn asshole. Because he's got tight ends, which he didn't have last year. He's got Brandon Marshall on the outside, he didn't have last year. And he's got an identical defense to last year. Now, obviously, you know, BJ Goodson suffered an injury. Janoris Jenkins was out week two. It's their inability to learn from their mistakes that is preventing them from putting together a full game. And until I can see that, my feet are out the door. And quite frankly, I have no faith. The Buccaneers just lost to the Vikings this past weekend. Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
And they did so against Case Keenum. They're gonna be pissed. And I know the Giants are sort of backs against the wall at 0-3, but let's not act like the Buccaneers are coming off, you know, a win all la-di-da. Okay, they just lost to Case Keenum. They're not happy.
Yep.
And they got a good team. They retooled that offense. The defense is underrated. They're missing a couple defensive backs. But it's not going to be easy. And if they go 0-4, I already have Mac and Jerry on the hot seat, and I think that's next on the topic list. I'm not optimistic, and quite frankly, I really don't think I have any reason to be.
Absolutely not. Like you said, it's been 20 straight games, 21 straight games where this mess has been going on. But my belief is that, and it might sound cliche, but let's try to win one game. The Giants can't clinch a playoff spot next week. They can't, you know, win their fans back over one game. Their main focus should be, okay, let's win one game. And our next game is Sunday in Tampa against the Bucs. Let's go out there, let's win that game, and then let's take it from there. Do we think that we should expect major changes? Probably not. But listen, I think you need talent to win in this league, and I think the Giants have talent. Is there stuff going on, or is there nothing going on in certain spots where the Giants can overcome it? Can they overcome bad play calling? So far this season, they have not. Can they overcome their defense not being dominant? So far, they have not. But when you have certain players like an Odell Beckham, like a Landon Collins on defense, who can make game-changing plays, I said this is a league of of momentum. It's a game of momentum. Stuff can shift quickly. I'm just not ready to completely say they're done. But I'm not going to sit here and say that they can turn it around as well. But my thing is, let's just focus on beating Tampa. Again, Tampa's not a juggernaut. They got beat by Minnesota last week, and Minnesota's was with the backup quarterback. So let's just focus on winning this game, and then let's take it from there. That's my only opinion.
Okay, fair enough.
That's my take on it.
So your next thing on the topic list is it fixable? You think they can fix it? Obviously, you're more optimistic than me, but fix to what extent?
Fix it where they can get back to contention of a playoff spot. You say no.
Yes,
I say correct. I say that the talent is there, but is the coach able to play to his players' strengths? That's the biggest question mark. And I'm going to say probably not. It's not fixable, but it's manageable. They can win despite of some of their issues that they failed to address. Make sense?
Yes.
All right.
Ben McAdoo, Jerry Reese.
Yeah, 0-3.
They're hot.
New York, and everyone starts talking.
Are they on your hot seat?
On my hot seat, yes. I think they should be. On John Mara's hot seat, no.
And I think that is the biggest problem.
Well, here's the thing. Here's the thing. And I'm not going to be an apologist. When we say changes will be made, I think, listen, if this team wins 4 games, 3 games, 5 games, I think a lot of stuff is on the table and what could happen. If they go 8-8, 7-9, I'll even throw 6-10 in there. There will be changes, but it won't be the changes that people expect. Now, I'm just going to give you guys a history lesson and why I think that there could be, it won't be just a status quo. We're going to bring everyone back. This was just a fluke season. No. In 2003, the Giants went 4-12. They fired their head coach. Obviously, the following year, they hired Eli Manning. They didn't have a great year, but because it was a new coach, new quarterback, new system, everyone came back. In 06, they went 8-8, lost in the first round of the playoffs. Remember, they started 6-2, mm-hmm. went 8-8. Tiki Barber retired. They lost in the wild card game to the Eagles. Both coordinators were fired. Spagnuolo came in. Kevin Gilbride came in. Then, obviously, they won the Super Bowl 08. 08, Spagnuolo got the promotion. So, 09, a new coordinator came in. After 1 year, Bill Sheridan was gone. Let's go into the 2010s. 2010s, obviously, Perry Fuel came in to replace Bill Sheridan. The team is went 10-6. Defense played okay. Offense played okay. Remember that big Philly game, the meltdown?
Mm-hmm.
But they brought everyone back. 2011, they won the Super Bowl, brought everyone back, obviously. 2012, they didn't fire anyone because coming off a Super Bowl year, it wouldn't make sense. 2013, Eli Manning has a horrible year. The offense didn't do anything. And what happened? The offensive coordinator retired. Entered your friend Ben McAdoo in 2014. 2014, defense doesn't improve. Historically bad against the run. Perry Fuel fired. 2015, 6-10. And what happens? Head coach resigns. So I could definitely see a situation where we see a lot of heads roll in terms of coordinators and coaches. But as far as McAdoo and Reese, things have to be really, really bad for them to be gone. And for Jerry Reese, especially, because the Giants don't fire GMs. And regardless of what you and I think, I just think that's the reality of the situation. Now, if they're in a position where they're in the, they have a top three pick or a top five pick, then everything's on the table.
I mean, that, the thing is, I agree with everything you said, because it's just the way that, that John Mara likes to work. I think anything under, I'll say five wins and under,
okay,
head's got to roll. I think six wins and more, there'll be some coordinator changes, namely on the offensive side. Ben McAdoo has play calling taken away from him, and a real coordinator is brought in. Jerry Reese.
Yeah.
You know my feelings on Jerry Reese.
Mm-hmm.
If the Giants are tasked with a top five pick,
mm-hmm,
I'll say top seven.
Okay.
Why should the guy who just picked Eli Apple and Eric Flowers back to back get benefit of the doubt in this situation?
See, I don't think you can book Eli Apple and Eric Flowers. I know Eli Apple's struggling, but he's done a lot more positives than Eric Flowers has. I know he's struggling.
That's like being the tallest midget in the room.
No, I mean, come on. Listen, he's struggling, and but I'm not ready to just put him in that Eric Flowers category. But I'll let you finish.
No, they're not in the same category. They're not in the same category because Eric Flowers is far worse. I don't think there's any debating that.
But Eric Flowers set the offense back.
Right.
It set the offense back. It set the rebuild of the offensive line back. I will give you that. Yes.
But for a 10th overall pick, mm-hmm, I don't think it's a stretch to say that Eli Apple has been disappointing so far.
Yeah, I mean, he last year was his rookie year, and we talked about how playing corner as a rookie, making the transition is tough. First 3 weeks, it's been rough, he's got to play better. At the same time, labeling him or putting him in a certain category that starts with a B, I'm not ready to do that yet. Sorry. But he's got to play better. You're right. 100% right. He's
got to play better.
It is alarming that he is, you know, his ball awareness has sort of been in question.
Yes. Now, this sort of goes a step further than just looking at draft picks.
Yeah.
Well, it is sort of related. Eli showed flashes.
Eli Apple or Eli Manning?
Eli Manning showed flashes, okay, mm-hmm, on Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any debate that he is on the decline. I would not call him washed up yet.
No, absolutely.
However, and we both agree on this, yeah, if the Giants were given a top five, top seven pick, and there's that franchise quarterback to replace Eli Manning staring him in the face, would they let Jerry make that pick? Or would they want a new face to come in here, evaluate the options, make that potential franchise-altering pick? Because if they do that, that new GM is going to want his own personnel. And not just coaching staff. It could be the end of Eli Manning. Especially with that ridiculous cap hit of his and his decline in play, and the fact that, you know, with the money that Jerry had to spend on the defense, there's not going to be that much cap room to totally fix the offensive line, and to go through entirely through the draft is unrealistic. It throws a wrench in things. That's all I'm saying. Because if you change the GM, there's going to be a lot more changes underneath. And what those are, I can't say. This is entirely speculation based on an 0-3 start to the season. There could be way more heads rolling than we think if Jerry is the first one to go.
Absolutely. I think if Jerry goes, then a lot of other people are going to go. But I just don't see a scenario where Jerry goes, unless this team is just, I'm talking 4-12.
Yeah.
You know, and
that's the scenario that I'm picturing right now. I said six wins and above, I think coordinators change. And by coordinators, I mean we get a real offensive coordinator and Ben McAdoo relinquishes play calling. Under six, I don't think anyone should be safe, especially with the amount of talent this team had going into the season and their Super Bowl aspirations.
And the amount of money that the owner's spending.
Yes, exactly. All right.
I'll give you that. I think if they go 5-11 or worse, I think everything's on the table.
Okay.
And, you know, we could potentially have to talk about a whole new regime coming in. But Eli's contract is a little tricky now.
Yeah. I didn't want to get into the intricacies, but it's not going to be as simple as saying, okay, adios.
Yeah, they could cut him next year, but they have to take a $12 million dead cap hit. Yeah. They only saved like $10
million.
After 2018, that's when they can get out. That's when they can potentially get out of that contract, and then not have to worry about a lot of dead cap. So it's an interesting debate to have, but in my opinion, it's a little too early.
Yes, it's week three.
Yeah.
week three of 2017. All right, looking ahead. The upcoming schedule is not easy. I don't care if the Chargers are 0-3. I don't care if the Bucs just lost to the Vikings. I don't care if Seattle's offensive line looks like poop.
And you don't care if the Broncos just lost to the Buffalo Bills.
Because that had trap game written all over it. And if I'm correct, we are going to Denver.
On Sunday night, yeah.
That's going to be an unmitigated disaster. Yes. I give them a 0% chance of that game. So chalk it up.
Wow.
0%. And before that game, you can remind me of this moment so I can double down on that comment. Mm-hmm. Zero. Going to Denver, I give them a 0% chance.
See, this is such a week-to-week league. I think that we could be sitting here next week and you'll be more confident than me.
I mean, listen, that's not really my MO, but anything is possible, especially if we see some dominant play on Sunday against the Bucks.
Yeah. I like that response.
Yeah. All right. So looking ahead.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at the schedule. Every one of these teams has a flaw.
Yeah, all teams in the NFL.
I just don't think – I just don't like what I've seen from the Giants. It's that simple. Like, I think the Chargers' offense is underrated. I think the Bucs' offense is underrated. Broncos' defense is going to destroy this offensive line. And up against the Seahawks, that game might end 3-0 because both offensive lines are atrocious, and the Seahawks probably have the best front seven in the league. We spoke about them and had them pegged as our – we like them to make a run in the NFC this year.
I had them in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, you had them in the Super Bowl. I believe I did too in my Gotham picks. But really? Yeah, but listen, that offensive line is brutal, man. I don't see it anymore. But against the Giants offensive line, that defensive front's gonna have a field day. So they got the Chargers. So after the Bucks, they've got Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram. Mm-hmm. They got the Broncos, and then they got the Seahawks.
Yeah,
that is brutal.
Brutal.
Brutal defenses to go up against.
Yeah.
Now, I know the Chargers secondary is sort of injured, so we're going to see a lot of 11 personnel, Eli getting the ball out quick because Ingram and Bosa are unreal. This is a rough, rough schedule to lead up to a bye.
Yeah, listen, it's tough. You beat Tampa, you get some momentum, and I think that's kind of like the key word of this
momentum.
Of this episode, momentum. If you beat Tampa, you go home. You got the Chargers cross country. Not really a good team. They have ways of bringing the weaknesses out of the Giants. But you win one, you win another one. You get two in a row, and then you go to Denver, and then listen, it's the NFL. This is why they play the game. But I think the Giants focus
any given
right now,
Sunday.
Yeah. I think if I'm the Giant, as a fan, obviously you win this week, right? And then you win at home against the Chargers. Then you'll be 2-3. You'll be in the same spot that you were last year, but obviously a little bit different scenario. And then when you go to Denver, you play the best game you can play and just hope for the best. You try to find ways to get the ball out of Eli's hands quickly. And if you win that, then, the whole fan base is going to be happy again. We'll be back to 500 and everything will be great. If you lose that one, then, you turn around, you play the Seahawks, at home. If I'm the Giants, right, and just pure contention standpoint, right, by their bye week, if they could be 3-4. Because when they get
would mean 4 wins in a row. I'm sorry. 3-1. I got it all backwards.
Yeah. They go 3-1. So they beat the Bucks, they beat the Chargers, and then either the Broncos or the Seahawks. And then you're 3-4, you go into the bye. You know, you come out of the bye, you got the Rams at home. That's not a given win because the Rams have been playing really well. Then you go at the 49ers. Again, you win those two, then you're 5-4, and then it opens up the stretch run at the Redskins, at the Raiders, Cowboys, Eagles, Cardinals, then close out against the Redskins. So the goal for the Giants, obviously, to win Sunday, but then looking ahead, if they can get to that 3-4 mark and be right in striking distance of going back above 500, then we can then you know, you have to take it, and you'll be happy about that.
Yeah. All right.
What's next? If they lose Sunday, then forget about it.
0-4. I want to see you like get real mad. If they start 0-4, I need like a Weiss rant, like I ranted about Beckham earlier.
Well, listen, if they go 0-4, right? We've said all we've said. You know, like at this point, what else can we say?
Beating a dead horse.
Yeah, play calling sucks. Offense is broken. Offensive line stinks. GM failed to address the offensive line. Defense is taking a step back. Quarterback looks like he's in decline. You know, I mean, what else can we say?
Yeah, that's about it.
I think that, look, if this falls apart, I'm with you, man. I just want a complete overhaul, like top to bottom.
Start
like
fresh.
Like front office, obviously head coach, you know, quarterback, if that's necessary, just a complete overhaul. That's what I want. Because you just can't keep being the status quo. You know, you just can't keep doing it over and over and over again. It's kind of time to hold people accountable for some things, but I'm not ready to go there just yet.
And is totally fine. What else? What else are we talking about today?
Can I give I want to say one thing about McAdoo.
Okay.
It took me a second to realize this, but you think McAdoo's comments about Odell, about how he'd rather not talk about the penalty and talk about the good things he does, do you think that was sort of McAdoo? Because McAdoo is a player's guy. The players do, you know, they do have profound respect for him. He does always, he's kind of a guy that has his players back more so than other coaches. But do you think that was sort of McAdoo saying, kind of taking the blame away from Odell and kind of putting it all on himself and kind of letting the media go after him instead of going after Odell?
No.
Did you kind of, you don't think that was that?
No. I think that's just like he's sick and tired of talking about it and wants to be like, all right, let's just talk about the actual game instead of, you know, a penalty that didn't really affect the game at all.
Yeah, I can see that. I just thought that it was because last year it seemed like everything McAdoo would say, it would get twisted out of control.
Yeah.
And then everyone would make it seem like he's calling out the receiver. But this year I kind of got the sense that he's like, all right, I'm just going to take all your bullets, warranted or unwarranted, a lot of them unwarranted, and you can come after me and just leave Odell alone.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's not what I got, but
it's just a theory.
And that's fine.
There was a lot of we didn't talk about the biggest news of the week.
Yeah. I got into it on Twitter though.
You did.
I like heavy. I had MAGA robots in my mentions like all weekend.
Yeah, you see those pop up a couple times.
Yeah, more than a couple for me.
Yeah.
Yeah. You want to talk about it?
I tend to stay away from the politics and listen. I whatever your opinion is,
yeah,
on the national anthem, and I always tell people, and I have this good discussions with people all the time. The national anthem, believe it or not, it means something different to each person individually.
Yes,
like that's not like a false statement. That's the truth. Like for me, the national anthem for me represents the opportunity that my parents were given when they came to this country, the opportunity to raise me here. I was born here, but to get married here and to have, you know, me grow up here and, you know, the opportunity to live that American dream where I could have been, you know, somewhere else and who knows what I've been doing. And I was given that opportunity. My parents were given that opportunity. So, you know, freedom for all, justice for all, that's my belief. And I, I think that me having that belief, it doesn't make me less patriotic, but that's just what the national anthem means to me.
Yeah.
To you, it might be something different. To you, you might have had, you know, grandparents or parents that served in the military and you stand for the national anthem to honor them. And that's completely fine. But I think that people can't seem to come to an agreement that the national anthem means something different to different people. You know, it might be different to you than it is different to someone else. I just want to know why, you know, you disrespect players like that and you say something about someone. I mean, that's not right, man. That's, you call them SOBs.
Yeah. I mean, I've expressed my thoughts on it. I don't know if everyone gets the full picture. I mean, listen, like every sporting event I go to, I stand for the national anthem. Every time they honor a soldier, I'm giving a standing ovation for that soldier. That's my belief. That's what I believe in. You know, you have that First Amendment right. And if you want to use that First Amendment right to express yourself by taking a knee, you have that right.
Right.
And it has gotten so construed to the point where it really pisses me off. People who think that Colin Kaepernick is protesting the national anthem, it's the equivalent of them thinking that Rosa Parks was protesting public transportation. That's not what he's protesting.
I like that now.
He's protesting racial and social injustices that have been in America for hundreds of years, as recently as 50 years ago, that are still going on today. That is what he's protesting. Now, like I said previously, you can take a lot of these things on a case-by-case basis. There are some cases that have come up in the media where I say this is total nonsense, and then there are some where there is a legitimate gripe. And as a free-thinking person, you should have that ability to look at the facts of a situation and say, this is right, this is wrong. Colin Kaepernick is not protesting the anthem. Colin Kaepernick is protesting racial injustice in America. And the fact that these Twitter eggs would have MAGA in their bio just don't seem to understand that and don't seem to understand what the First Amendment stands for. It is ridiculous. Now, the other thing that's pissing me off, and I don't remember, and someone can remind me, it was either Nick Wright or Shannon Sharp, both, despite how annoying they can be, had very, very good monologues on the situation on their individual shows. First Take, I don't even know what show. They're all blending together. They're all terrible. The one with Skip and the one with Chris Carter. Basically, I believe it was Nick Wright who called out the owners because I think 8 or 9 of them gave $1 million to Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't until Donald Trump tried telling them what to do is when they got pissed off. When it became a money thing and it became an ego thing, that's when they took a stand.
Oh, Shannon Sharp.
Okay, so Shannon Sharp said that. And I thought he brought up a very good point. Especially someone like Shad Khan, who gave $1 million to Trump. Woody Johnson, who gave money to Trump and works for Donald Trump. It's only when you attack these guys' money and ego. I mean, look at Jerry Jones. People are applauding Jerry Jones. Oh, he nailed it. They kneeled and then they stood for the anthem. No, it's all show. It's all. Yeah,
what was that?
Listen, man, I don't get it. I don't want to get into Jerry Jones or the Cowboys right now.
Yeah.
It's mind blowing. And I think, you know, we've seen this a lot, not only in this political climate, but in this media climate where every single organization can take an issue and twist it and manipulate it to fit their narrative. I don't think we've seen a more perfect example of that than we have with this anthem nonsense.
Yeah, and I'm going to say something, and I don't want to offend anyone, but my opinion is there's a lot of people, or there's a part of this whole people that have shown resentment that are using the military,
yes,
as a shield to guard their inner.
There's nothing quite as offensive as using hate. Dead soldiers to justify your argument.
Because you can't tell me that offends me what they're doing. They're disrespecting the military and the flag and the fallen soldiers. But then you turn around and you support an individual who's countless times insulted a war hero.
Yep.
Has insulted the family of a fallen soldier.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just can't do that. And you have, like, we have to, like,
just be consistent in your argument.
Exactly. You know, you can't be inconsistent. You can't be a hypocrite. And that's what makes me to believe that a lot of people are using the military and the police as a shield to block their inner hate that they don't want to show. Yep. So that's my opinion. Yeah. I applaud Colin Kaepernick. I think what Colin Kaepernick did was it's a peaceful protest, and it's a protest that made – listen, the point of protest is to make you feel uncomfortable so we can have a discussion.
Yep.
That's the whole purpose of a protest.
And there's nothing more peaceful than what he's doing.
There's absolutely nothing more peaceful.
And nope. As a matter of fact, I feel bad for him because now – I already felt bad for him because he was essentially blackballed from the NFL. But I felt bad for him because now the message that he's trying to get across is being totally misconstrued. And absolutely. You know, on top of that, that's it. It's crazy times, man. It's crazy times.
It is. I always say I'm gonna write a book about this time when I get older. I'm gonna make a lot of money too.
Yeah, yeah. If we all survive the next 3 years.
Oh man. Well, the Giants gonna survive on Sunday?
No.
No. They're not, so what? Okay. So when does the first win come then?
I think the best chance they have is against the Chargers.
So that's when, in your opinion, that's when the first win comes.
Yeah.
All right. I think they win Sunday.
Okay.
I think so. I think
we got a 4-5 game at Tampa.
At Tampa. Again, I don't think Tampa's a juggernaut. They got a lot of injuries, especially with their linebackers. So
yes.
I think the Giants win Sunday. And then we go from there.
Okay.
But I didn't pick them last week.
Neither of us did.
Neither of us did, yes. But I'm picking them this week.
Ooh.
Yes, I got the Giants. I'm going to take them. I'm going to say I'll do 23-20 Giants.
Okay.
Rojas kicks a game winner. Defense finally gets a stop.
I'm going to go 30-17 Bucks.
Wow, defense going to give up 30 points?
I think it's – yeah. Yeah, I don't like what I've seen out of the run defense. And Tampa at home coming off angry, off a loss. I think they're going to come out flying.
Angry off a loss, and maybe Tampa is not who we thought they were.
Yeah, listen, that could be – that could absolutely be the case.
We'll see, but if there is a time to turn it around, Sunday will be a good time for the Giants to start, right?
Yeah, no kidding. After 0-3.
Yes.
All right, anything else before we end the show?
That's a wrap.
All right, guys, thank you for listening this week. We love you. We appreciate you. Thank you for tuning in. Go follow me on Twitter at EthanGSN. Go follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Go follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. iTunes, Audio Boom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio. You know where to find us. We will speak to you guys next week.
Peace.